Well, hello and welcome to ASI Cast episode number 131. And I'm joined today by long-term ASI friend Jane Clark, who's not only CEO of SIM, the Coalition for Innovative Media Measurement, but has also become the person we tend to turn to when we want to understand what's going on in the state. So hello, Jane.
Well, hello there, Richard. And you definitely need to understand what's going on in the United States these days, because it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and you'll be joining us on the Friday at our upcoming annual conference to talk specifically about cross-media measurement and the WFA's North Star. But that's not going to be our main focus today, as there are a lot of other interesting developments in US media measurement, some of which overlap with that, of course. Now, SIM became part of the ARF a while back. Firstly, how's that working out, and how has your mission been adapted as a result?
Well, actually, it's a good fit, and we haven't really had to change the mission or our initiatives much at all. Both organizations, you know, see themselves as the place for objectivity and neutrality in the industry. You know, we both have the same constituencies that include media companies, media buying agencies, advertisers, and vendors, all kinds of vendors, research vendors, tech vendors, consultants. So we've become kind of a subspecialty within the ARF, so that we focus very much on the changing TV technology environment, which, you know, is not necessarily something that the ARF would be doing a deep dive into. Mm. They tend to look, you know, more across all media and sort of all advertising issues dealing with creative and how research is organized in companies, and, you know, a lot of issues that are broader that have been going on for a long time. So we're just very much focused on, you know, how to bring more granular data into television and how to get to cross-platform media measurement. So it's pretty complementary.
I mean, over the last few years, you've been examining a number of issues. We had a paper from you and a couple of consultant colleagues last year about the whole area of connected TV data and how that could be joined with set-top box data. What measurement issues have you been focusing on of late?
Well, we look at the cross-media measurement challenge from the point of view that there are four building blocks. And so almost all of our initiatives revolve around those building blocks. And as you just said, yeah, the first one is getting granular census level scaled machine data, whatever you want to call it, you know, in as great a quantity and as representative nationally across the US as you can get, which includes combining smart TV and set-top box data, you know, because all of these data sets have their biases. The second building block is getting that digital census data. And this is actually more complicated than it might sound. This is because a lot of the data is separated here between ad measurement and content measurement. And it hasn't been as easy in the US as, you know, like with Barb in the UK and even the WFA solution there, you know, with Kantar, where all the networks have accepted the SDKs from the measurement providers. The networks have not accepted the SDKs from either Nielsen or Comscore. They're too cumbersome. They have their apps are across so many different platforms. It's too difficult to manage. And so, you know, there's an issue there of how to get the census data both for ads and for content, because content measurement is still important. You know, there's a company called Conviva that there's a lot of interest in, because a lot of the networks are using their SDK for kind of quality of service measurement. And so they may become one of the solutions, because most of the networks are using them already, and they're able to adapt a second by second, you know, measurement for both ads and content. But the third building block is panels, you know, and so they've been, you know, the old mainstay for years, but now we just see them as one building block where you use it to calibrate and adjust anything that's missing in the big data. You know, the big data doesn't ever get to 100%. Those are all sort of convenience samples, you know, that are, you know, data exhaust. And so, especially on the television side. So you still need panels. And you know, Nielsen has, you know, obviously had a lot of issues, which we can talk more about if you want, you know, during COVID with their panel. And there are a couple of other new panels starting up that might be less expensive if all you need is calibration from a panel, if it's not the full measurement coming from the panel. And then the last area is ID resolution, you know, and this is what really glues everything together. And this is really critical. And Sim's been doing a big project on all the data matching that goes on with all these ID vendors, because there isn't a lot of visibility into what happens. You know, the set-top box and the smart TV data are matched to all these identity vendors to link them to a household, and then to link the household data to other data. And, you know, each time you do a match, you lose households along the way, or individuals, depending how you're doing the match. And nobody ever looked at what gets left on the cutting room floor. You know, what are the biases? It's kind of like the new version of non-response rates. You know, what are the biases that are introduced in the match process? And is the sample that you end up with, you know, comparable to what you started out with? You know, what are the biases that have been introduced? So we have a big project that we've been working on, you know, for like 6 months to get all the ID vendors to cooperate with doing a kind of comparison of all the match rates and the match biases. And we're also doing a panel project with one of the new panels, Hyphometrics, to look at, you know, kind of how they do passive viewing and wearables combined with the kind of button pushing, the traditional more remote control button pushing.
Now, you mentioned Nielsen when you were doing your overview just then. And I mean, over here in Europe, I assume we can still call ourselves Europe. But certainly Mike and I probably want to still describe ourselves as European despite Brexit. But over here in Europe, we tend to see that Nielsen hits problems every 2 or 3 years, often around the upfronts period, and then new deals are signed and it all eventually blows over. But this time people keep telling me there's real fire behind the smoke. What's your take on what's going on? Is this a serious incipient change in the industry, or is it all about negotiation of deals really?
Well, you're absolutely right. I share your cynicism, although those deals don't all come up at the same time. The networks have multi-year deals. They have been making those deals shorter and trying, and also negotiating hard for, you know, lower cost increases every year. And as they each have been working over the last 10 years or so, you know, ever since even the launch of SIM, many of them have been experimenting with other vendors, but the other vendors just haven't really been up to snuff yet. And so I think what this does is, you know, there have always been issues with Nielsen, you know, with the panel representativeness of, you know, minority groups and, you know, Hispanics and African-Americans and Asians. I mean, forget it. They don't even, I mean, they do offer Spanish language interviewing, but they don't offer any other languages. And so, you know, there have been issues with cooperation, you know, with getting younger people, the button pushing in large households. I think there's, you know, been known to be issues. The first person walks in the room and presses the button and says, "I'm here." And then the rest of the people just sort of ignore it. So there's always been a feeling that there's been underreporting in large households, younger people who don't like to push buttons, you know, the whole compliance side of it. I don't know what it is like. Maybe it's just Americans, we're less and less compliant, as you can see with all the that's going on with COVID and all the anti-vaccination sentiment.
Are you implying some people think pushing buttons is an infringement on their human rights or something?
Oh, it's something like that, probably. I mean, I don't know. I it's really hard to understand some of this. But anyway, I just think, you know, compliance is going down, the response rates on panels. I mean, the net response rate to Nielsen's recruitment, you know, is probably in the teens, and nobody ever really looks at that. Mm. And so there have always been issues. And I think that just during COVID, with all of the challenges, and they weren't upfront about telling the industry about the challenges and being honest. You know, there was one of the network researchers is the one that discovered, like, where are these missing 9,000 households? You know, where, why have I, there 9,000 fewer households than a year ago? And so they just really didn't manage it well. I mean, everyone knew that it was a challenging time, and it's not that, you know, everyone wanted them to have unsafe practices and go into households when people didn't want them. But, you know, the fact was they just really didn't level with the industry as to exactly what was going on and how to fix it. And it just, it became, you know, untenable, and it gave an opening for the networks who'd been experimenting with all these other approaches. And, you know, Nielsen's come up with this Nielsen One, which many feel is just, you know, a marketing initiative. It's been a bit challenging to get the product details under that, and whether they really have all of these four building blocks and whether they have the quality in all those four building blocks. I mean, they haven't been that upfront about their ID graph. They're starting to launch a big data product in January, but they haven't been, they've been fairly open about who their data providers are, but they don't have as many as ComScore. Their digital measurement, they now say they have 100% streaming measurement, but it's not, that's not completely clear, like, exactly how they're doing that and where they're getting all that data and how much of it is real, you know, content measurement. So they're just, they haven't been as upfront as they need to be, and they haven't fixed their back end, you know, processing, which is old fashioned. They haven't, they can't process huge amounts of data, which is what you have to do in this new measurement. And so, you know, you can't rule them out. They've managed to hang in there for years. And the other thing is they have a lot of IP in this area around watermarking and fingerprinting in particular. And so all the new providers have to somehow, you know, negotiate around all of Nielsen's IP in order to offer new solutions, which is challenging. Mm. So you can't completely rule them out, but I do think that there's a new opportunity here, you know, and they lost some key staff people also, like the head of product, you know, went over to Experian at the same time that Kelly Apkarian went over to NBCU, you know, and so they lost some really key people. And I think, you know, those people are helping to design some new measurement approaches and to try to make that work. So, you know, it's the U.S. is kind of a dog-eat-dog space here. And that's what's happening. You know, everybody's pushing to get what they want, but some of it's from a proprietary point of view. You know, the sellers have their way of looking at it. The buyers are pushing their way of looking at it. So there'll be some duking out here before we really get to what's a solution that's going to work for everyone.
Mm. I mean, obviously listeners and viewers are aware that in the US, it's not a situation where there is a JIC as such. So it's not the case that, you know, if Nielsen got into severe trouble, you know, they would be deselected by a JIC or anything. It's more that, in theory, people have always been able to buy audience measurement from whomsoever they want, so long as it's accredited by MRC for trading. I mean, we could be seeing perhaps more of a spread market than we've had in the past, with people picking and choosing. I mean, it's happened in the past. I remember about 7 or 8 years ago, we kept getting a string of little announcements on UK websites about, you know, such and such a local market signs with Rentrack, and, you know, when that form of return path data was being totally promoted. But can you see a for want of a better phrase, a hybrid situation where some people stick with Nielsen and other people do move over to these new pretenders to the crown?
Well, first of all, by the way, you don't have to, you can trade on whatever you want. It doesn't have to be MRC accredited. It's advised to be MRC accredited, but, you know, Google and Facebook
true.
For years without being MRC accredited. So, and people are still trading now, even though Nielsen's accreditation has been suspended and that local market accreditation was suspended a while ago. And they lost their digital ad ratings accreditation a while ago too, you know? So all of their major measurement services are in some form of suspension or hiatus. And, you know, and in a way, it's kind of helping them to have a pause while they go and create the new Nielsen One. But, you know, I mean, the local TV networks have been, many of them have moved over to ComScore because the panel, the size of Nielsen's panel in these markets had, could never capture the fragmentation in the viewing. And so the setup, you know, there are 10 o'clock news, which is sort of the anchor for a lot of these local broadcast stations. You know, the ratings from Nielsen looked like, you know, you were, you didn't like them. I mean, they looked so erratic. You know, they would go up and down and they would have zero sales sometime when one guy goes on vacation. And so what they found from using the set-top box data is that there are people there. There's an audience there. The set's turned on. And you know, there is a steady audience. And so it's better to have an audience than to have a zero sales. So even if ComScore's measurement wasn't accredited, they've been using it. Even, you know, sometimes what happens is the buying systems use Nielsen and then they use ComScore as a secondary currency. And so that's also the issue is the Nielsen numbers are completely embedded in all of the buying system. You know, you go buy GRPs. And so what ends up happening is they just make the buy based on that. And then they do like a secondary verification using using ComScore or other set-top box data. So that's been going on for a while.
It's interesting. We'll watch it unfold with interest. Obviously, Nielsen will be speaking on a couple of days at our events. So it'd be great to get their perspective on things as well. I think the other thing we've been aware of in the last month or so in the US is the ARF measurement, annual measurement event, which is it's audience. I think it's either audience time science, audience X science, or audience loves science. If it's depending on how you interpret the X, how did they announce it? Or
they probably would go with all of those things, but I think it's supposed to be audience time science.
Audience time science. So, what were the main themes that you'd highlight that stood out for you from that event?
The idea is just that they wanted to make sure that, you know, a scientific approach is a big part of measurement. This was when Scott McDonald came in as head of the ARF. He was just re-emphasizing, you know, the scientific method, which is good to keep reminding people.
Definitely.
So,
it's better than audience times fantasy or...
Audience time sales pitch. So, you know, there was a lot of variety and there's an awful lot of content that came out of the conference. I was particularly interested in a panel that I helped to create about panels. You know, so Howard Schimble did a panel with someone from ComScore and 605 and I think Video Amp about panels and what we need from panels. And so there is a lot of discussion going on in the US. And Sim's doing the study with Hyphometrics and there's the T-Vision panel. And so there's a lot going on about, you know, what do we need from panels and how can we get high quality panels going forward? And, you know, are there ways to get the data that you used to get from panels, you know, through algorithms and modeling? You know, the main thing that people want is co-viewing estimates and who's in front of the television set, you know, who and how many are in front of the television set, as well as some, you know, like over the air audiences that aren't captured through set-top box or smart TV data, you know, people that aren't connected to the internet or aren't connected to pay TV. So there's some groups of people that, you know, aren't represented in some of those data sets. And so how do you, you know, what's the best way to design a panel to get those estimates that you need, you know, without costing an arm and a leg the way that it does now, you know? So I found that one really interesting. It was a really good discussion there, because some people have created algorithms looking at the set-top box data to model all of that data. So can you model that, or do you really need the underlying truth set to do that modeling?
Mm.
That was a good discussion. There's also, I mean, Mark Pritchard was there, Kelly Apkarian was there. There was a really good, I think that the highest number of papers and topics was on attention. Mm. And I think there's this attention council that, you know, is coming out of the UK and is a global initiative looking at all the different ways to do attention measurement. And I think it was TVision launched an attention CPM, an ACPM, where they tried to, you know, attach attention, you know, actually looking at the screen is how they, yeah, they measure attention, you know, through their camera methodology. So, you know, there were a lot of new approaches talking, you know, about getting to these building blocks of cross-media measurement. There was a panel about identity resolution. There was some good debates. So it was a great conference all around.
Mm. Well, hopefully we'll be building on some of those themes. Certainly we had a big focus on attention at last year's event, and we'll be following up at this year with a paper from Karen Nelson-Field, who's going to be talking about hopefully the next stage, which is moving from the theory into, you know, actual practical application and how people are actually using attention data.
Yes, I mentioned that involved in this attention council.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I think an attention council meeting was the last physical meeting I went to before the pandemic hit in the UK. So it's kind of stuck in my memory. The last foreign meeting I went to, as in abroad, was in Paris, which was about the WFA initiative. And we're going to focus on that at the conference. So I don't want to do a deep dive into that at this late stage in our chat. But I mean, you mentioned the other things that are going on. What sort of profile has that initiative got in the US? Is it as all-consuming as it seems to be in the UK at the moment, or is there so much going on it's just one element that's in play?
Well, I think, you know, the ANA has hired a you know, a EVP of measurement for marketers, Natalie Bordes, who's terrific, and so she's been putting out a number of RFIs, you know, along with all the RFIs that are going out from the sell side. Mm. So the vendors are very busy in the US responding to RFIs and RFPs. And they're working towards a pilot test, a couple of pilot tests, I think. I think there's some pieces, but she'll give you an update at the conference. I think that the sort of overall picture is that the sellers, the network side, you know, the TV and converged TV sellers, you know, and I think this was true in the UK as well, we're not too happy with a design for cross-media measurement that came from Google and Facebook. And, you know, it was kind of like a Trojan horse where they knew there was something wrong with it, but they didn't quite know exactly what it was. So they've really, you know, banded together under their trade organization, the Video Advertising Bureau, the VAB. And so the sellers really want to, you know, have a big say in any new forms of measurement and how the television measurement gets linked to measurement from Google and Facebook. And then the buyers, you know, also want this to be all sort of marketer centric. So as I was saying before, you know, the sellers are, you know, pushing, you know, their point of view into the measurement solution, and the buyers are pushing their point of view into the measurement solution. So, you know, I do think that it will come together, but I think that over the next year, you're going to see, you know, a lot of back and forth about,
you know, which solutions work better for, you know, which side. I mean, there's a lot of parochialism and sort of partisanship going on now, where everyone wants measurement that works for them. You know, the sellers say they want independent measurement that's transparent, and the buyers say they want measurement that, you know, is fair and unbiased, but each of them typically want something else out of the measurement. You know, the sellers want higher numbers, the buyers want lower numbers. And so, you know, there will be a back and forth as the right methodology emerges. It's always been a compromise. I mean, even, you know, in the US, we don't even measure ads in television now. You know, we still have C3 ratings, which is a negotiated compromise between the buy side and the sell side to average all of the minutes in an entire program, and then take that out over, you know, 3 days or 7 days to get the time shifted viewing, you know, which is almost becoming an antiquated concept because of streaming. So there's a lot to take into account to make this work. And the other thing is that the networks are data owners now, just like Google and Facebook. And so they wanna, you know, have some control over how their data are combined with other data, the same way that Google and Facebook feel, you know, about protecting their data and their customer experience.
It's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. And I was, funnily enough, a week or two ago, I was having to explain to a young person, a millennial, what time shift was, which, as you say, seemed to be a bit, it's the link between the broadcast and VOD had been completely broken as far as they were concerned. But anyway, we look forward to catching up with you at the event itself. We'll put a link to tickets in the show notes, or listeners can go to our website directly at www.asiconferences.com. In the meantime, thanks, Jane, and we'll see you in November.
Well, thanks very much. And I'm really looking forward to getting up at 4:30 in the morning and joining my panel, I think, which starts around 6 a.m.
Yes, it's beyond the call of duty, definitely.
Thanks very much. It's always great to talk to you.